This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. I assume it's probably already too late for today and this week, but our 2022 Summer Golf Tour is continuing on as we have entered week 5 out of 10. So this is about the midway point. We have hit halftime. And this week was the Lynx at Stono Ferry. Hopefully you got yourself a foursome this morning. If not, don't worry. We still have a few more weeks to go. We're halfway through. Next week will be the Rivertown Country Club. Foursomes go on sale every Monday morning at 8 a.m. for just 98.9. So make sure you're ready to go next Monday, 8 a.m. Put it in the calendar. Set the alarm. And be set to go for next week's foursomes for the 2022 Summer Golf Tour. All you have to do is head over to charlestonsportsradio.com. Don't let me bury the lead. charlestonsportsradio.com is where you have to go. You'll see it there right on the homepage. 2022 Summer Golf Tour. Every Monday, 8 a.m., new foursomes go on sale for 98.9. Be ready to go next Monday. When I go on the website, it takes you to the golf course. So I don't know. Have we heard anything? I assume they sold out because the foursomes, they sell out within minutes.
I haven't heard anything yet, Luke, but I would assume so. I can go ask our lovely man in the back there to see if he has heard anything, but I'm assuming it probably sold out knowing our summer golf tour.
Yeah, absolutely. It goes quick. Just make sure you pick maybe a little bit of a cooler day to get out there.
Yeah, try so. Try to do so.
Heat advisory today. Goodness. Could be 107, or at least feel like 107 in some places. Brutal. Hey, we'll try to catch up with Adnan Virk and talk some baseball, talk some movies. We have to break down Hustle. Did you do your homework assignment? Did you watch Hustle this weekend?
I did watch Hustle weekend, Luke. I'm not a movie buff like you, so it's difficult for me. You are a movie buff. There's no doubt. You can talk movies with the best of them, Luke. I mean, Scorsese, it's all up there. But
yes,
I will say, I can't break down my movie takes, or was it a good movie, was it a bad movie? And I thought, I mean, we'll break it down later, but I enjoyed what I saw.
You're like Andy in The Office.
Yeah.
When he says something like that. I forget the term he uses. Yeah, but he could never be a food critic or an art critic.
This art is bad. That's what I would be if I was an art critic.
No, I'm the same way, too. I read a lot of these reviews. I'm somebody that I'll watch a movie, and then I go into a deep dive afterwards. I'll go on Reddit. I'll read the Wikipedia. I'll go on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know. I'm just very curious after seeing what other people think. Did I miss something? Yeah, and I'll read some of these reviews. And I feel like movie reviewers, movie critics, I don't know, they put in like these fancy words and everything just to try to sound more important. But they break down these films from a real like artsy perspective at times. And yeah, I'll be like, well, I don't know. I didn't see that.
Just tell me if it was good.
I thought it was funny. I don't know. I didn't know there was that message in the movie. Like, yeah, so I'm pretty basic too. But I do have a few. When it comes to the sports movies, there's a couple of things you got to nail in a good sports movie. So I got a couple of takeaways, a couple of critiques. We'll get to that later on. And in the baseball world, like, the Braves are playing really well. So this is more about the AL. But what I find interesting is I was looking up some numbers yesterday in Major League Baseball. The four teams that have played the most teams with losing records, the most sub-500 teams, are the four teams with the best record in the AL. So I find that very intriguing. And the Yankees now go through a stretch where they play 13 straight games against teams with winning records. So it'll be an intriguing next couple of weeks for a team like New York. Speaking of baseball, joining us now is Adnan Virk, who works for the MLB Network, also the NHL Network, and is host of the Cinephile podcast. Listen to that wherever you get your podcast to hear his take on movies and everything in entertainment. And he's on Twitter at Adnan Virk as well. He's with us now. Adnan, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great, Luke. How you doing, man? A pleasure to be on with you.
Yeah, appreciate the time. Let's talk a little baseball first. I got a lot of things I want to ask you about. But when it comes to these New York Yankees and how well they're playing, as we sit here today, I know it's only June 13th. I mean, is there a team out there? Can somebody stop this Yankee team? Or are we looking at a Yankee World Series this year?
It certainly feels like it right now. And I live in the North Jersey area, so it's a lot of Yankee fans around me. I'm 35-minute drive away from Yankee Stadium. It's pretty remarkable how good this team has been this year. You know, all the numbers. If you win, when I look back, the Yankees have won 44 of their first 60 games. It's very rare that teams have been able to do that. And it's such a select list. 84 Tigers, they won the World Series. 98 Yankees, they won the World Series. 0-1 Mariners did not do so. And there was one other team in that list as well who did win the World Series. So, like, five other teams have had starts like this in the last 50 years, Luke, and four of the five have won the World Series. And the Mariners, by the way, they lost in the ALCS. So, I mean, at the very least, Yankees are winning the division, and I would say they win a round, and they'll get to the ALCS. That's like bare minimum. More than likely, they make the World Series. And then winning it, hey, listen, the Dodgers, I think, will be formidable. I love the Padres. I just got back from San Diego, so I'm pro-Padre, America's finest city. You know, I think that the Mets are still going to have something to say about it if DeGrom and Scherzer are healthy. But specifically to this Yankee team, Aaron Judge is on pace for 66 home runs. Like, the ultimate American League home run record is still Roger Maris, 61. Judge is taking dead aim at that. In a walk year, he's going to be getting $35 million a year over 7 years, I think, when it's all said and done. That's how good this year is. He'll get 7 years, 250, and he's 30 years of age. You know, Stanton's been really good. Donaldson gives him some edge. LeMahieu has bounced back. Their defense is much, much better. But the real story, Luke, has been their starting pitching. Like, there's no question about it. Gerrit Cole's an ace, but even with hiccups, Nestor Cortez is in the Cy Young conversation. Jameson Taillon, the Canadian, has been excellent. He's also going to be a free agent after this year. Luis Severino has looked like the two-time All-Star that he is. Hasn't pitched at all, really, in the last couple of years. And then you had Jordan Montgomery, who's an excellent lefty who reminds some of Andy Pettit. Bullpen's been a little beat up, but still, Clay Holmes is outstanding. He's their new closer. Top to bottom, the only issue this year has been for the Yankees, how much people were getting mad at Joey Gallo. And even he is like hitting like a 95 OPS plus. If you like your analytics, 100 means he's an average player. So he's only a slightly below average player. That's the worst thing you can say about this team is Joey Gallo. That's the worst thing. Their catchers, like Trevino's actually had a good offensive season now, and they're much better defensively than Gary Sanchez ago. So in answer to your question, I think the Yankees win the World Series just because they don't have any true discernible weaknesses.
Yeah, it's been an incredible start to the year for them. You know, on the flip side, in the NL, you mentioned a few teams there. Look, the Mets have the best record, and they've been doing it without their two aces. Now, of course, where we are, this is a Braves country. So I think a lot of Braves fans, as the Braves start to play better, are hoping that the Mets are in for some sort of one of those classic chokes we've seen from them in the second half of seasons. When you look at the Mets, is this a team that are they one of the better teams in the NL or one of the better teams in Major League Baseball? I guess my question would be, you know, are the Mets – obviously they have the best record right now through 60 games, so I guess it would feel odd questioning them. But how for real is this Mets team right now and what they're doing this year?
I think it's definitely surprising. I thought they would win the division, but I also didn't think they would have this kind of success this early on. Like, the fact they were 8 games up as of a couple of weeks ago was really surprising to me, especially with DeGrom yet to have pitched this year, and Scherzer missing significant time. But to your point, all the fans there in Braves country, here comes Atlanta. Ever since Brian Snitker holds that team meeting, they can't lose. And clearly firing up the troops offensively. I mean, I love Acuna. He's back to being the guy that he should be. I thought Olsen was going to be in the MVP conversation. Love his play coming over from the Oakland Athletics. Atlanta guy. Their pitching has obviously improved as well. I'm still waiting for Soroka to come back, my fellow Canadian. But I think Atlanta's on the kind of run that you were expecting they would be on. And we all know a year ago, they waited until August 6th to get above 500. They never looked back, win the World Series with 88 wins. 88 wins this year is not going to cut it. You're going to have to win at least 90 wins to make the playoffs, especially in the National League. National League is better than the American League. You might get some 500-ish teams. Like, 85-win Red Sox might get the welcome AL. Not going to happen in the NL. So I think the Braves have really shown how impressive they can be by going on this run, closing that deficit. And yet the Mets, again, if I'm a New York fan, I go, hey, we're still, whatever it is, 5-6 games up. It's despite the fact we don't have our aces. Marte just got hurt. Alonso missed a couple games. Like, even if the lead, Luke, is, let's say, 3 games by the 4th of July, the Mets still feel pretty good because they know they're going to get Scherzer and DeGrom back in July. That is like an amazing trade deadline acquisition, right? You're not getting just one ace, but two aces. And their pitching went from being first in the National League to 24th since Scherzer's been out. So obviously their starter ERA will be impacted. But I do think it'll be a great race of Atlanta and Philadelphia, and the Phillies finally lost. I do think Atlanta will be the more formidable challenger. But think how tough it is in the National League. So let's say Mets and Braves both make the playoffs. I think in the Central, it's Brewers and Cardinals, you know, 1-2. And in the West, you've got Dodgers, Giants, and Padres. Like, to me, that's really strong, seven teams looking for six playoff spots, and you could throw the Phillies in that mix. There's eight teams there, two of them are not going to make it. So it's going to be a fun stretch, down the stretch.
You know, the Angels had that 14-game losing streak. They finally snapped. They fired Joe Maddon in the middle of it. How important is it just for Major League Baseball in general to try to have Trout and Ohtani playing in important games, you know, in September or the second half of the year?
It's critical. I was looking at the list of three-time MVPs, and Trout has easily played the fewest postseason games of any of those guys in that list. He's played three. Very quickly, 2014, where they got swept against the Royals, and he really didn't do much in that series. You know, he's the best player in the game. You want to see him in the playoffs when the lights shine brightest. That's why, part of the reason why football is so great, because Mahomes is the best player, and you've seen him win a Super Bowl. You've seen LeBron dominate the NBA. You want to see, as a baseball fan, the best player do well when the stars shine brightest, and that's why you want to get Trout and Ohtani in the playoffs. The fewest games otherwise of a three-time MVP playoff games is Jimmy Fox with 18. So that shows what a disparity is between Trout and other great players who have been able to have playoff success. I'm a big fan of Joe Maddon. He's always great with the media. You know, he's funny. He's charming. I was disappointed to see that he got let go, but obviously they thought they had to do something. Did not see that tailspin coming. I called the Angels-Red Sox game May 4th. At that time, they were a first-place team to be a game up. They looked great. Defense is really good. Offense, Turner Ward, even with Rendon being hurt, you know, their starting pitching's improved because of Lorenzen and Syndergaard and Detmers and Sandoval supplementing Ohtani. And then the bottom fell out. Like, I've never seen anything like that. In 2 weeks, the whole season changed, and Joe's out of a job. And I think the Angels were maybe inspired a little bit by what happened with the Phillies. They fired Joe Girardi and just ripped off an 8-game winning streak. I think Artie Moreno saw that and saw the Angels lose to the Phillies specifically and said, okay, we can do the same thing. But it has not been that way. Yes, they stopped the bleeding. But I think Phil Nevin is realizing what a challenge is going to be. I like Phil. I think he's a good manager. But they've got to have a – listen, that team, Luke, is way too much focused on those two guys. If Trout and Ohtani aren't producing, they're in trouble. The rest of that lineup just goes south in a hurry. Ward, they got to get back healthy. Rendon's done nothing since signing that contract. Either he's hurt or ineffective. So it's going to be a challenge for L.A. to make the playoffs.
Talking with Adnan Virk from the MLB Network, also the host of the Cinephile podcast. So I have to ask you, Adnan, before we let you go, a couple of movie questions, because you have to explain this for me. The Top Gun sequel, Top Gun Maverick. I have not seen it yet. I'll be honest with you. I don't really care to go see it, at least in theaters. But everybody is talking about this movie being like the greatest movie of all time. And sequels usually don't deliver as good as the original. So help me out with this. Top Gun Maverick, are we looking at this historically great movie? Or is it nostalgia? What's going on with all the hype around this new Top Gun?
Luke, it's number two by a mile. Anybody saying this is a great movie is a moron. Okay, plain and simple. This, what's happened here is people haven't seen a movie in theaters in a long time. Guys like me, as you know, because of the Cinephile podcast, I'm in a movie theater watching a weekday matinee once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks. But I understand for the vast majority of people, they've been streaming, and unfortunately because of COVID, they've not been in the theater. And they say, oh my God, I love Top Gun. And the majority of this audience is 50 plus. So this is purely nostalgia. This is every 50-year-old guy going, oh my God, me and my brother used to argue, I'd be Maverick, he'd be Iceman, let's go relive our youth. It is a perfectly adequate movie. It's not a good movie. It's not a bad movie. It is perfectly adequate. It is exactly what you expect. And it is tried and true formulaic film. Maverick, now an old man, although it's Tom Cruise, his face is tighter than a bow and arrow. He's had more work done than Liz Taylor. He's still got black hair somehow, amazingly. He's drinking vampire's blood for all we know, raving psycho Scientologist that he is. Anyways, Tom Cruise is now the student becomes a teacher, right? Cocky guy, never really got promoted. Okay, I'm going to go teach this next new wave of recruits. And one of them is Goose's kid. I don't know if it's Goose's kid because he has a mustache. How about that kind of character development? Nice job there by the writer Christopher McQuarrie, who once won an Oscar for The Usual Suspects. Now he's slumming in Top Gun sequels. Anyways, they have an issue because, of course, Goose's dad was killed and Goose's kid blames Maverick for it, blah, blah, blah. Story couldn't be more melodramatic, formulaic, et cetera. So that brings us to this. You're saying to yourself, I don't go see a movie with these kinds of plots. I want the action. And the action is good, but it's not great. It looks something special. Again, I can give you a dozen better action movies. I'm astonished at the level of people who are saying this is not only a great film, but should get Oscar bait. It's absurdity. As you know, I rank films that are four-way beliefs. I give this two-way beliefs. Again, average movie, fine, it's decent. You want to be entertained? I guess so. And part of it, let's be clear, is I find Tom Cruise loathsome. As I referred to by Scientology ways, I think the best acting he's ever given is when he was jumping up and down on Oprah's couch. Because that's who this guy is. And I hope everybody who watches Top Gun Maverick and says it's a great film, I hope they also spend 2 hours watching Going Clear, which is the brilliant documentary made by Alec Gibney, which changed my life. I saw it in 2015, and it's called Going Clear, The Case Against Scientology. And you watch that film, you see what a horrible person Tom Cruise is. The fact that he is complicit and aware of all the abuses that Scientology does. The fact they're even allowed to exist, to me, is appalling. And the fact that he is still out here making millions is just disgusting. Having said that, I paid my $13.50, and I parked aside my attitude towards him to watch it objectively. There is no doubt he is a massive movie star. He still looks great. I think he's a decent actor, definitely made some good films. Rain Man, Jerry Maguire, sure, Color Money. As a person, he's an F. And I'm shocked people are loving the movie that much. But then again, I'm not shocked. What is the summer all about? Superheroes, sequels, nostalgia. Away we go. Top Gun Maverick.
That's a good point. Before we let you go, I have to ask you about another one. Are you intrigued? It just came out, so I'm sure you haven't seen it yet. You've been traveling. But Adam Sandler's basketball movie called Hustle. Are you intrigued about a Sandler basketball movie that just came out?
Not really, to be honest. You're right. I was traveling. I was in San Diego. I've heard about it. People were mentioning it in the office. Haven't had a chance yet. I'm more excited. Jerry and Marge Go Large. Unbelievable title. I just interviewed the director, David Frankel. He's going to be on the latest episode of Cinephile, which is coming out tomorrow. It stars two actors I love, the great Bryan Cranston and Annette Bening. So that film's on Paramount Plus this Friday. I got the screener sent to me, so I'm going to be watching that tomorrow before I watch Hustle. Listen, I like the Sandman. I'm not crazy about him like other people are. You know, I didn't watch The Waterboy and all that nonsense, Billy Madison. But I did love him in Uncut Gems. I thought he was tremendous. And I love him because I love Paul Thomas Anderson. I love Punch Drunk Love. So I'm aware that it's got the sports bent to it. And a friend of mine said Robert Duvall's in it. I love Robert Duvall. Maybe I'll watch it for him. But I know it's on Netflix. I will check it out. I'm sure basketball fans will enjoy it. But you're asking me personally, I'm not particularly fired enough. I might get around to it. I don't know. We'll see.
He's Adnan Anverk. Check out that podcast, Cinephile Pod, which, as he said, is released the latest episode tomorrow. Listen to it wherever you get your podcasts. And watch Adnan on the MLB Network and the NHL Network as well. He's on Twitter at Adnan S. Verk. Adnan, appreciate the time breaking down baseball and some movies with us. Appreciate you joining us.
Luke, I did it for one reason. I heard Charleston. I have heard Charleston is one of the great cities in America. I've been bugging my wife and kids for 5 years to go. This is pre-pandemic, but I was still at ESPN in 2017. So we're going to try to come down to Charleston this July. I'm going to have to hit you up. Let me know where to go, restaurants. Because, listen, they're selling me big on Hilton Head here for the kids. So I think it's going to be like a 2-day Charleston, 5-day Hilton Head. But please, I will take your recommendations. I want to go see Fort Sumter, big Civil War guy. I can't wait. Charleston, here we come.
Absolutely. Hey, absolutely. We'll take care of you when you come down. Appreciate it, Adnan.
All right. Thanks, Luke. Take care.
Pleasure's all ours. Appreciate it. Adnan Verk. And I'll be honest with you, I'd say you flip that. I think you do 2 days at Hilton Head, 5 days in Charleston.
Yeah, that's the move. Go play golf at Hilton Head. Go enjoy the quiet, nice beach. And if you want to go bring the kids, have a good time, you come to Chucktown. I mean, you come to the Holy City. That's what it's about.
Come on. Charleston, great spot. Appreciate the time from Adnan. Strong take, strong opinion on the new Top Gun.
Yes.
But I think, I haven't seen the movie, I think a fair and right opinion. I do not get the hype around this movie. People talk about it's the greatest of all time. Well, maybe people aren't actually saying that, but it's being built up as if it's the greatest movie of all time.
No, people are like saying it is the best movie they've ever seen in their life. I'm like, I feel like you could go through the Rolodex just a little bit and find a better movie than Top. But we just looked it up back here. It's releasing on Paramount Plus, which I don't have. I'm probably going to have to get it. On July 11th. So they've pushed it back a little bit. Because remember, when Batman came out in theaters, it was a month later than they released it on HBO Max. So.
Oh, then I'll just wait.
Yeah.
I wasn't planning on seeing it in theaters anyways, but you're telling me in 4 weeks I'll be able to watch it from home? I'm in no rush to watch Top Gun. I'll watch it for free when it's streaming. Paramount Plus, I don't have, but I will because they have The Offer on there,
ooh,
which is the show about the making of The Godfather, and I have to watch that. So I'll do it all together and watch them all together at once. They give you like a free 7-day trial too, so I'll just bunker down for a week and binge the show and watch the movie, and boom, we're good to go.
Takes a vacation time just to knock it out. Yeah.
Sorry, I can't work this week. I only have 3 days left in my Paramount Plus free trial, and I have to finish the end of The Offering. And I have to watch this Top Gun Maverick. Appreciate the time from Anna. Check out Cinephile Podcast. He's not a radio guy, not in terms of the medium. I'm talking about the movie, Radio, which may rub people the wrong way in this state. Doesn't like that film. Hey, in regards to baseball, I was getting into this a little bit before Adnan joined us, and then we were talking about some baseball stuff with Adnan as well. What's interesting, as I said, when you look it up, the four teams that have played the most opponents with a losing record are the four teams that have the best record all in the AL, oddly enough. And that's the Astros, the Yankees, the Twins, all lead their divisions, and then the Tampa Bay Rays as well. They're tied with Toronto for the most wins of a wild card team in the AL. So the four teams that have essentially, you could say, played the easiest schedules, they played the most losing teams so far this year. Like, for example, the Astros have played 60 games. 45 of the 60 games have been against teams under 500. They have played 15 games against teams with a winning record, the Astros. And they're in a terrible division, so they're going to continue to play bad teams all year long. But I am intrigued that you look at the four teams with the best records in the AL, they've played maybe the four easiest schedules. And you know baseball's a long season, and things change, so I'm curious to see. That's not to take anything away from the Yankees, but the Yankees, the New York Mets, for example. I saw this stat. I'll throw another stat at you. The Mets have won more games against teams over 500 than the Yankees have played. So the Mets, without their two aces, they're in first place. The Braves are catching up to them, but they've beaten some good teams. The Yankees have this incredible run. They've gone 37-10 in their last 47 games, but they've beaten up on a lot of bad teams. Now they play 13 straight games against teams with winning records over the next 2 weeks and 21 of their next 26. So we'll get a real good sense over the next month, right? If they play like 500 ball, say, if they win even like 60% of the games, if they come down from this rapid pace they're playing at, which you know at some point they're going to go through a little bit of a downstreak. Like the Dodgers right now are under 500 last 2 weeks. Everybody goes through a rough patch. Braves started the year with a rough patch. But I'm curious to see. We're in for a long summer in Major League Baseball. I've been very intrigued by this baseball season. Maybe you haven't been paying a ton of attention yet or just watching the Braves. But I think there's been some fun storylines. There's some really good teams. The Yankees, the Mets, the Padres, the Dodgers are all playing high-end baseball. Here come the Braves. We've already had a couple of managers fired. The Phillies are playing better. I think the baseball season has been really interesting so far, as interesting as it can be in early June, because we still have over 100 games to go. We're not even halfway through yet, but I think it's been a lot of fun. The Braves are playing great baseball. They're catching up to the Mets, and the Braves are another one of those teams. They've beaten up on bad teams during this winning streak, but that's what you have to do. You have to take advantage of the bad teams, and we'll see. The Braves will have a real test at the end of this month in about 2 weeks when they take on, I think it's the Giants and the Dodgers on a week-long trip there, so we'll get a real good sense of the Braves coming up at the end of the month as well. What do you do against the good teams? That's obviously the real sign of a good team in Major League Baseball. There's a lot of bad teams in Major League Baseball, and there's a lot of teams beating up on those bad teams that can cushion their record. So I'm curious about the Yankees these next 2 weeks. We'll see about the Braves. They'll really be tested in a couple of weeks. Yeah, that's when you find out what these teams really are made of. Appreciate the time from Adnan. When we come back, speaking of baseball, the most impressive thing that Tennessee baseball did this year. And we have a champion, a baseball champion in the state. We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
We're set to have a wide-open College World Series. Get to that here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Plus, we have a champion in the state when it comes to baseball. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Adnan Virk joining us from MLB Network to talk movies and to talk about Major League Baseball, too, and what's been going on so far through the first about 2 months of season. Okay. My Apple Watch is talking to me. Enough. College World Series. I don't even know what I was saying. You know, technology. I was thinking about this the other day when it comes to technology, and I forget what it was about. But we were having a conversation about, you know, this technology is not it's not always the best thing. You know, like, for example, in the music world, I love Phil Collins as a drummer. And then they came up with these drum machines, and Phil Collins is using a drum machine on all his hits in the 80s. It may have been easier, but sometimes technology, right, you still appreciate the old thing. And I was going to use that in some sort of sports thing. I don't remember what it was, but I was having that conversation with somebody yesterday and relating it to sports. Anyways, now I got my Apple Watch talking to me. It's throwing me off. I forgot what I was going to say. Technology. Crazy. The College World Series. Tennessee got knocked out yesterday. The number one seed was upset by Notre Dame. They got swept. They lost both games. And so Notre Dame's going to the College World Series, right, the final eight in the College World Series for the first time since 2002. Tennessee, the one seed, they're done. And you also have, I think it's Oklahoma going for the first time in a number of years. We're going to have a wide-open College World Series because Tennessee was viewed as the heavy favorite. And yet, their season's over with. Now, historically, when we get down to the final eight, as we're doing here with the final games today, and then you head to what they call the College World Series, right, which is once you get to the last eight, 75% of those teams are made up of one seeds. 75%. So typically, on average, six of the eight teams are top seeds. And Tennessee will not be going. The number one seed overall has not won the national title in something like over 20 years. So the favorite usually doesn't finish the job, from what I read, and that's the case with Tennessee this year. Now, the most impressive thing Tennessee accomplished this year, because they did have a great year. They set all sorts of records. They scored the second most runs all time. They're going to put a bunch of guys in the Major League Baseball draft this year and beyond. They set a bunch of offensive records. They had a great record. They blew out a bunch of teams. Most impressive thing that Tennessee did all year, they made Notre Dame likable. Everybody was pulling for Notre Dame this past weekend. And I think that's more impressive than anything Tennessee did on the baseball field. That Tennessee made themselves so unlikable by flipping the bird on the field and the bat flips and just the obnoxious nature. And they were not very humble throughout their success this year. And they're drawing with umpires. And guys are getting kicked out of games. And they're talking trash and they're obnoxious. That for the first time maybe ever, the general sports population was pulling for Notre Dame. If you're not a Notre Dame fan, you probably hate Notre Dame. You never root for Notre Dame unless you're a Notre Dame fan. And in this case, everybody wanted Notre Dame to win. Even, a lot of times SEC fans will root for other SEC schools. Not the case here. Everybody was against Tennessee. So props to them. They had a great year. They didn't get far enough, but they did make Notre Dame likable. And that's maybe their largest accomplishment. But now it opens things up in the College World Series. We'll see what happens moving forward. I hope my UConn Huskies will be there. We got a winner-take-all game coming up, UConn and Stanford, at 4 p.m. this afternoon. So that's what I'll be doing. That'll be my pregame for Game 5 of the NBA Finals. Hopefully my Huskies will punch their ticket to the College World Series and join the other, so far, six teams in that final field. And speaking of baseball champions, we had one here in the state. Props go out to North Greenville, who won the national championship at the Division II level Friday night with their victory, led by former Gamecock Landon Powell, who has done a fantastic job as the head coach there and was the guy I said that if the Gamecocks do make a move this offseason, that's who you should call to come be your coach. Landon Powell has said that that'd be the one job he would leave for, would go be the coach of the Gamecocks. And he did a heck of a job to win this national championship. When he took over at North Greenville, and it's been about 8 years now, they were winning single-digit games. And then quickly, by like year two, right now they were winning over 30 games. They're having great years. And if you go and you look at his records, I mean, North Korea, they've become a powerhouse under Landon Powell. And now they took that final step to become champions. Here was an emotional Landon Powell after the game, just talking about the emotions, the feelings of winning that championship, hugging his wife after the game and appreciating the little things. Here is the now national champion head coach, Landon Powell.
Yeah, I mean, the wives are unsung heroes for college baseball coaches. You know, my kids, my wife, they suffer because I'm always coaching and with these guys. You spend a ton of time. And, luckily at the Division II level and where I'm at North Greenville, I have more freedom than most coaches. I get to coach my son's travel ball team on the weekends and do some other things because we have Sundays off being a Christian school. But, you know, my wife she's been a tremendous supporter of me ever since we started dating freshman year of college. She's been with me through thick and thin and a lot of great moments and a lot of really tough moments. And, one thing that I've learned in my career or my life is to cherish the great moments, because there are bad ones coming for all of us. There's adversity coming for all of us. And that makes the great moments that much more special. So that was a really great moment to hug her, and she deserves it. And I love her, and I'm proud. I'm proud to have her support.
Landon Powell, Friday night after winning the national championship. Yeah, I think that's a good message, right? Appreciate the good times, because those always seem to be fleeting, and we all deal with tough times throughout life. So you had to appreciate the good times even more. And boy, I'm sure was that a good time for those at North Greenville winning. By the way, how about that, right? He coaches a college baseball team, wins the national championship, and he still has time to be coaching his kids' baseball team on the weekends. Props to Landon Powell, double dipping, coaching two different teams, and now a national champion with one. We'll see if and when Landon takes that next step for some sort of bigger job. You may remember he reached out. He was trying to become the assistant for Mark Kingston last year when they had a couple of spots to replace on that staff. I think Landon Powell, right? That's the other name to watch, at least in these parts. He's due for a bigger job eventually, and he's done a heck of a job at North Greenville. So congrats to them on winning the national championship. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500. Let's go to the phones. Alan is with us. Alan, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, Luke, how you doing, man? I'm in Atlanta, Georgia right now. I've been listening to your show all last week, and it was fantastic. I just wanted to let you know that we're coming back to Charleston right now, and you inspire us to listen more to your show every single day. So thank you for doing that.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. That means the world. I appreciate those kind words.
Absolutely. And also, I would like to talk Braves baseball.
Yeah.
11 straight wins for the Braves going to Washington tonight. What do you think?
I think the chances are pretty high they continue that winning streak against the Nationals, but you have to take advantage. Certainly this is a series you should win, the series, and continue to take advantage of. When you play these bad teams, these are the games you have to win, which is what they've been doing during this winning streak. So can they win their 12th straight tonight? Absolutely. But I think absolutely that they, you know, you win the series against Washington and continue to move forward playing good baseball.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Luke, for your time. We appreciate you. Great listening to you.
Hey, well, I appreciate you. Thank you for the kind words. Thank you for listening. Appreciate the call. Thank you to Alan. Listening in Atlanta. Appreciate you taking us with you. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500. And you can always take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Plenty of options. Stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, if you're somewhere with a smart speaker out of town, or download the free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store, and you can listen to the show through the app anywhere in the world, live or on demand. Appreciate you, Alan. Yeah, it's hard to predict, right, on a game-to-game basis in baseball, but you would assume that the Braves could continue the winning streak against the Nationals tonight, and if nothing else, eventually you're going to have to lose at some point. So if that happens tonight, you know, if you're the Braves, you just win the series, as they should. The Nationals are pretty pitiful, and they are one of the worst teams in baseball. When we come back, Trent's Takes. The Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up a little bit later on, we'll break down Adam Sandler's new movie. Don't worry, we'll avoid, the best of our ability, the big spoilers at the end. But it's a sports movie, so it's one of those, it's not like some sort of twist movie, right? It's a pretty straightforward film. We'll break it down for you. We'll let you know if it's worth watching or not. Streaming on Netflix, a new basketball film, Hustle, with Adam Sandler. We'll get to that next hour. We'll get back to the NBA Finals as well. Unfortunately for Deshaun Watson and the Browns, more bad news there. We'll get to all that coming up. But we do it around this time each and every day. It's time to find out what's on the mind of the producer. Time for Trent's Takes.
What's on the mind of the Morrow Midday Show producer?
Draft Luke Morrow.
That's right.
It's time for Trent's Takes.
The radio cowboy will be coming, and he's coming soon, folks. Luke, before we get into some sporting news topics, I would like to reiterate my incredibly horrible day on the course yesterday. It was abysmal. Now, I was trying to break it down on why I did so bad. I was in a new environment, new course. Maybe that threw me off. A lot of wide open space. Didn't know where the ball was. The ball was, I always make contact, Luke, and usually it was going straight the last couple weeks. This time it was curving right every single time. Now, I don't know if that was because I had a little bit too much fun before the golf outing and potentially during the golf outing. It was also incredibly hot. I have no idea. But Road to the Live Golf Tour is still continuing. We are still hot on the trail, and we will not stop until I shoot a well enough score to be able to get into the Live Golf, which probably be 30 years from now, but I won't stop, folks. I won't stop. But an abysmal day on the course, Luke. It was embarrassing. It was embarrassing.
You never know. Live Golf Tour may be desperate enough just to, you know, get some bodies to fill that tour.
Maybe a producer on local radio could be a draw for them.
Absolutely. We build that brand, and then you become a real asset for them.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't mind it. Luke wouldn't mind it whatsoever. Now, I would like to point out game four of the NBA Finals. I can go back to my Trent's takes from the day before because I hit my player props, if you will.
Oh.
My predictions became correct. Steph Curry over 4.5 threes. I also took his points as well. Andrew Wiggins hit. It was a good night. It was a good night overall and an amazing game of basketball, even though some people in this office disagree that it was an amazing game. It was a phenomenal basketball game, Luke, and I expect just the same from tonight. So, with that being said, I got a couple things for tonight. I'm not taking the number, Luke, once again, because the number makes me nervous. It's been at 4 basically every single, game this series, and I never know which way to lean because it usually isn't a close game. Towards the end, one of the teams ends up pulling away. So I'm going to stay away from the number. But this one might shock you here, Luke. Tonight, Jason Tatum over 27.5 points. He's going to have a big game. It's going to happen. He'll probably go for 30. I'd also say, Jordan Poole as well. Hit Jordan Poole on Trent's takes on Friday. No big deal. Jordan Poole, once again, over 12.5. It's been sitting at 12.5 this entire series. He keeps hitting the over. I absolutely love it. Let's go with Jordan Poole over. And this one might throw you off a little bit. Al Horford over 1.5 three-pointers. I think Al gets going from deep tonight, especially late in the ball game. So I'd take Tatum's over, Poole's over, and Al Horford over 1.5 threes. He's just got to hit two. The big lummox can hit two. There's no doubt about it. I think he can hit those shots. Pumped up for game five tonight. Luke, how you feeling about my props going into tonight's ballgame?
I certainly agree with you on Tatum.
Yeah.
I think Tatum bounces back because he's averaged something like 30 points following losses. So he's very good coming off a loss. I imagine, especially the way he disappeared in that second half, I think he'll come out a little inspired tonight.
Yeah.
So I agree with you on Tatum. Poole is always a bit of a crapshoot. It's a low enough number. He should be able to hit it, but we've seen games where he kind of like disappears.
Yeah.
This final seems to be maybe a little too big, right? It's the Peter principle. You always hit your ceiling. He's had a good postseason, but this finals has he's disappeared at times. And then Horford, I don't know. You know, he obviously played well in game one out there. You know, when it comes to the matchups, I like that the Warriors, they bench Draymond. You use a little bit more of Looney. If you're the Celtics, what you could do is if you take Robert Williams off the floor and Horford's your big guy, right, you go small, you're going to have to pull Looney. He's not going to want to play on the perimeter. My point being, if those are the matchups, if Looney's playing more, Draymond not as much, if I'm the Celtics, I may put Robert Williams on the bench a little bit and have Horford be the number five. Looney matches up with him, and then that would lead to Horford playing on the perimeter more, which could then lead to more three-point opportunities, hopefully hitting your 1.5 over. So, hey, you nailed him on Friday.
Yeah.
So I'll take my chances that we can have another good night tonight. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt with these picks because you did so well last time.
Well, thank you, Luke, and also thank you for breaking that down in a much more intellectual way than I could have. So I greatly appreciate you, sir. It's like my movie reviews. Playing good, playing bad, pal. That's all I need to know. I'm a feel guy. Yeah. I'm a feel guy. That's just what
That's
it
the
is.
Way to go.
I don't need the analytics. I'm a feel guy, Luke. How are we feeling on the court? Now, I will say, we have some news, and I'm not sure, you kind of hinted at it. I'm not sure if we're going to be talking about this in a little bit, but I would like to point out that 48 hours ago, the odds, I keep bringing them up for the AFC North. That's very interesting.
Yes.
Because we've had a massive shift over the last 48 hours. So, 2 days ago, the odds for the AFC North, Ravens plus 200, Browns plus 200, Bengals plus 210. Absolutely perplexed me. Couldn't understand it. Now, as of today, Luke, Ravens plus 160, Bengals plus 200, the Browns plus 270. So what do the odds makers know that we don't know? Now, they might be projecting that they believe a suspension will be coming, but we know these people know what they're talking about. So I'm very intrigued because we haven't seen this kind of odds move basically the entire offseason with any other teams. This is the first time, and that's a big shift to go from plus 200 to plus 270. So what do the odds makers know that we don't know, the public currently?
Yeah, it's a good question. It may not even be anything that we don't
right.
know. They may see all this information coming out and think, like, this is bad. Something's, the NFL's going to have to do something severe, which is what I've been saying. This is bad, all this, these new things coming out. And there's a new one from over the weekend that I'll touch on in a few moments. But how about the fact that not only for the division, the Browns, right, all odds also have a correlating percentage, if you do the math. Based off of the Vegas odds, they're giving the Browns less than a 50% chance of even making the playoffs now with these odd changes. So Vegas is down on Cleveland because of, I assume, this latest information on Deshaun. And I think a lot of people are starting to come around to this idea of, yeah, you know what, we may not see Deshaun play at all this year because that New York Times piece, you know, we have other women speaking out, more lawsuits. Things have gotten worse before they have gotten any better for Deshaun and the Browns right now.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Now, Luke, I would also like to address something that you and I off-air spoke about briefly. Devontae Adams went on a press conference with the Las Vegas Raiders, I believe Thursday or Friday. We saw the clip, I believe, late Friday. Didn't really get into it because I was a little perplexed, right? But then I realized, okay, Tyreek Hill goes on a podcast, and he says that Tua's accuracy is much better than Patrick Mahomes, 10 times better, the quote was. Devontae Adams also said about Derek Carr that he is comparable talent-wise to the great Aaron Rodgers, four-time MVP Super Bowl champion. Now, I would like to just throw out some research that I did real quick, you know, if that's okay with you, Luke. Aaron Rodgers has been a starter in the NFL for 14 seasons, has thrown 93 interceptions. That blows my mind. Derek Carr has been a starter in the NFL for 7 seasons now, so half of what Aaron Rodgers, and has 85 interceptions. So if we're talking about just pure talent and accuracy, there's no way to compare them. But then I said, Trent, take your heart out of it, all right? Let's think about what these guys are saying. What do you expect Devontae Adams to go up there and say about his new quarterback when he just played with one of the all-time greats for his entire career? He's not going to say, well, I mean, he's not even close to Aaron Rodgers, but hey, I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be playing with my college buddy. No, he's going to gas him up. Same thing with Tua. Tyreek, about Tua. Tyreek's going to talk about Tua to everybody like he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. We all see the tape. We understand now. Can Tua have a massive improvement with a guy like Tyreek Hill on the roster? I'm sure it won't, you know, it won't hurt him having him on the roster. But these guys are going to say what they need to say. They're not going to come out and bash the quarterback of a team that just paid them $140 million to come. Let's not be fools. No, you cannot compare Aaron Rodgers and Derek Carr. They're not in the same boat, not in the same stratosphere, Luke. But these comments, they're just gassing their boys up. Love is blind, Luke. Love is blind. If you love these guys, you're going to talk about them at the highest ranks. But I don't think Derek Carr and Tua right now are Hall of Famers, if you ask me. So let's not put them in the same category as other Hall of Famers. That Patrick Mahomes, likely Patrick Mahomes, will be a Hall of Famer. I think there's no doubt about that. And Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I think the real test would be, like, if we swap quarterbacks, right? If you put Carr in the Packers right now, would they still be favored to win the division? I don't think so. If you put Rodgers on the Raiders, their odds would probably go up for this year. We know Rodgers is the better quarterback. I think, see, Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill are different in this situation because Devontae was answering a question. Tyreek Hill was on a podcast. I think he just brought it up on his own.
Right.
That's not necessary. You don't need to do that. Devontae, at least, he was answering a question. I would say, though, while both guys are trying to be good teammates, I think the political response is probably most appropriate. And if I was Devontae and somebody asked me that question, I would just say, you know, some lame answer about how I'm not going to compare quarterbacks.
Yeah, he's
say
a great like quarterback. That. You know, we played together for a long time. We have a chemistry and all that. But you don't need to say, like, well, as far as a talent perspective goes, he's on the same level. Because I think outside of the Packers haters in the world, which they are a ton of them, someone was sitting behind the glass right there with a microphone.
Yeah.
But you would say, as an honest football fan, that there is no way that you could compare those two. There's just zero way.
No, so, yeah, I wouldn't do so. He's trying to be a good guy. Carr's a friend of his, but, you know, try to give some sort of political answer and try to move on.
Yeah, Twitter warriors, just a PSA, just take it easy on trying to compare all these guys and thinking that they actually – I'm not saying Devontae Adams doesn't mean what he said, but there's no way in his mind that he actually believes that. Like, if so, we'll check the numbers at the end of this season and see what's up. Like, that's my only thing.
As you said, you know, love is blind. Devontae is – you know, good friends with Carr. So maybe he does, I don't know, maybe he does actually think something like that. But, you know, you don't need to put it out there. I always say that about these coaches. And the example that always comes to mind is when Will Muschamp, I think it was the year he got fired, said, like, this is the most talented team, unprompted, right? This is the most talented team we've had. You don't need to say things like this because then it just puts more pressure. Like, you're not being forced to say that type of thing. Devontae Adams, you don't need to say Derek Carr is on the same level because this year, if you start off 2-4 and, you know, Devontae has one touchdown and Carr's struggling, you know, everyone's going to point back to that and throw it in your face and say, like, oh, I thought you said he's just as good as Aaron Rodgers. You don't need to – I know he's trying to be a good guy, build up his teammate, but you don't need to offer up certain things because then it's going to come back to bite you. Give, like, as little information as you need to. So so that people don't have something to point to down the road.
We talk about that with Dabo all the time, and not harping on Clemson here and Dabo because Paul Feinbaum surely did his part.
Yeah.
But, I mean, after every single practice, and I've said it before on Fan Talk and others, like, it's DJ had the best practice we've ever seen at Clemson. He's throwing balls at Trevor can. It's like, how about we, you know, temper those expectations so the guy's, you know, going out on the field and throwing 100 yards and we're thinking, oh, well, he's the worst quarterback, you know, in Clemson history because we're being told otherwise, you know, during these press conferences.
I was just thinking about that this morning because there's a headline that says how Matt Ryan is reminding the Colts of Andrew Luck and Peyton Manning.
Oh, okay. All right.
So same idea. I know you want to pump up the tires of your guy, but come on. Don't compare Matt Ryan to Peyton Manning, 38-year-old Matt Ryan with a new team for the first time in his career. Comparing him to Peyton Manning, and then with Matt Ryan this year, right, when the team's under 500 and he has as many interceptions as touchdowns, people just throw that in your face. I know Frank Reich's trying to be a good guy, you know, get his quarterback excited and talk him up, but what are you doing? You're just setting them up to fail. We'll wrap up Hour 2 next. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
I used to roll the dice, feel the fear in my enemy's eyes, listen as the crowd would sing, now the old king is dead, long live the king. One minute I held the key, next the walls were closed on me, and I discovered that my castle.
Wrapping up Hour 2 of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We were talking last segment about how the Browns' odds have really shifted in Vegas. And even if you're not a gambler, Vegas is a great indicator of maybe what you could expect or things to come or just how they're viewing things. And there's a great correlation between the two of you know, I mean, Vegas, they continue to build casinos and tall buildings in the desert for a reason. They know what they're doing. So the Browns' odds are really shrinking. And I think just out of a fear of what the future may hold for Deshaun Watson and Cleveland. We got more, I guess you could say, troubling news over the weekend when a police detective, a Houston police detective, testified. This information was released this weekend. She testified that she believes that Deshaun Watson committed crimes after investigating 10 criminal complaints against him. She also expressed her opinion to the Harris County District Attorney's Office, but she was not called to testify before the grand jury and doesn't know why the grand jury did not indict the Cleveland Browns quarterback on criminal charges. She said she believed Watson committed criminal indecent assault, sexual assault, and prostitution in cases where money was exchanged and there was consensual sex. They asked her, did you feel confident that you had the evidence needed to pursue the charges? She said yes. They then said, there was no doubt in your mind as the investigation officer that a crime had occurred? And she said, no, no doubt. And there's a lot more. USA Today has the story. A lot more from her testimony, but she was pretty confident after investigation that Deshaun did something wrong and was surprised that she was not brought into, you know, there was no indictment. She wasn't included. It was just kind of swept away, unfortunately. And that's the latest in this whole Deshaun situation. Hour 3 next.